Hello and welcome to Map Bites episode 198. I'm Elaine Giles and I'm here with my co-host Mike Thomas. In this episode, Shrek chic, silicon shake-ups and studio spotlight shenanigans. But first, we heard from Jammy, who for reasons best known to himself, was torturing himself when the last show landed. And that was before I injected the image of the Don in a mankini into his psyche. You dropped this one whilst I was putting my legs through hell in the gym. Hence the delayed response, but I'm here, albeit with heavy eyes, but I'll do my best. MacBite's Syrian Lady Siri spoke to me. What an honour. Speaking of which, I feel like I almost have an honorary slot on the show, and it's a privilege I shan't take for granted. Well, do you know, Jammy, they can both get quite frisky when riled. I think it was the thought of being turned off that did it. MacBite's Siri didn't want that option making more public than it needed to be. The fact that he can be disabled is bad enough. The fact he may be able to be replaced by other digital assistants is, well, let's just say, potentially too much for him.
Stop reminding people, woman. It's bad enough as a rumour, but keep repeating it makes it worse.
Sorry about that. If it's any consolation, I'd never replace you. You're part of the team. But back to Jammy. Don in a mankini. I hadn't thought of the image myself, but now it's in my head. I feel the need for bleach too. The curry-coloured toilet brush would probably approve of the bleach too, considering that it was him that pushed it as a COVID treatment back in the day. And Shrek's mankini, love it. I remember wanting a Mac Pro and pricing it up, you know, as you do, and fantasising about it lasting an eternity. This makes me realise I'd have been stupid to do it. Restraint sometimes pays off. Well, I'm sure we've all done it, Jammy. I specced up the Mac Pro, the one that was replaced by the bin. I'm sorry, I couldn't bring myself to spec up the bin. As for the current Mac Pro, well, what's the point of the huge case? Apple don't want you to upgrade anything anyway. Timmy set eyes on a soldering iron 10 years ago and that was the end of homebrew updates. All of which is before we get to the wheels. I think Jammy has it right when he says, I think it's very possible that big companies like Apple are going to squeeze so hard in the name of greed that it might be the reason for an eventual collapse. Every single company seems to be doing the same. I see worldwide trouble in the future. As for the exodus to OpenAI, maybe this is one of the reasons for Timmy's rumoured retirement. Getting out before the damage gets too bad. Well, got to agree. These days it seems companies take more time trying to gouge customers than actually provide any kind of value, charging more for the same thing. And a favourite tactic seems to be adding a new, more expensive level to existing offerings. No difference whatsoever, except for the price. Then they wonder why customers leave. Anyway, Jammy then went on to screenshots. I always forget which number's needed for the screenshot shortcut. Have I mentioned my brain is decaying faster than a frayed tea towel? Well, those shortcuts are weird when you say them out loud, but they're seared onto my brain. It's comical here when Mike asks me what a shortcut is for something because I actually have to make the correct motion with my hands before I can tell him. I've got to make that gesture before I can actually articulate it. Jammy concludes with, thanks for another marvellous show. See you all on Friday. P.S. They never even gave me a lid. I'm howling. Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed Siri's support group. So did Siri. Now, it's time for the news. All right, folks, gather round. Because apparently stealing your wallet is too slow for some people. Instead, they're just stealing your taste. Yes, I'm talking about the iPhone Pocket, Shrek's mankini. Apple's bold but slightly baffling knit-over-the-shoulder iPhone bag that somehow, I have no idea how, managed to sell out the moment it landed. Who is buying this? Now, the official one, the real deal, with the fancy collab and the brand cachet, sold out almost immediately. Despite half the internet calling it ridiculous fluff. But here's the fun part. Within days, the knockoff makers had moved in. Welcome to the Copycat Con, where scammers saw dollar signs and thought, let's make some cushy cash from Shrek's Mankini. Apple's design went from haute couture phone strap to discount market stall knockoff within 48 hours. First off the line was something charmingly named Trendy Phone Pouch with Stretch Knit Material, courtesy of a seller called Generic, because giving it a real brand name would just be silly, wouldn't it? That one was priced $99, which, while less than half the price of the long official version, really? Less than half the price? It's still outrageously expensive. Less than half, and yet still feels far too much for what it is. But wait, there's more. Another listing popped up almost immediately, described as the 2025 knitted long shoulder phone bag. And this one, a mere $29.99, which is roughly a twelfth of what the official knit bag cost. Talk about a race to the bottom. It makes you wonder what all this luxury accessory fuss was about in the first place, because once it becomes disposable priced garbage, the whole premium brand argument, well, it unravels faster than a badly knitted iPhone sock. It isn't just about the cheap imitations undercutting the price either. It's about the perception. The official iPhone pocket comes with the whole Apple plus design house aura, quality, brand, aesthetic identity. But when a $30 knockoff looks almost as good for a third of the price, it exposes just how much Apple was selling the idea of premium and not a premium product. Something the majority of us knew as soon as it was announced. Think classic bait and switch, knitwear edition. And this little saga tells us something about the weird economics of designer accessories in 2025. Strip away the hype, the brand name, the collab credentials, and you'll come to a sad realisation that you're paying a premium price for nothing more than a few metres of yarn. In the end, a knitted iPhone sock is still a knitted iPhone sock, whether it's signed by a fashion house or sold by someone who saw an opportunity to make some easy cash. Consider that the next time you're tempted by a stylish phone cosy. Maybe your wallet, and much more importantly, your dignity, will thank you.
Our broadband provider, Brisk, has been hacked. The first that we knew about it was an email that I received last week. It began, "Hi Mike, we sincerely regret to inform you that some of your data stored on one of our systems, which is used to process new installations on the Brisk broadband network, has been accessed without our permission. There's no evidence that any of the information has been misused. However, we ask you to be vigilant for any unexpected emails or phone calls that may appear to have come from Brisk." So, what information are they talking about? The email said, "The information is limited to your contact details, and this includes name, email address, contact number, and physical address. No bank or credit card information was compromised, nor were our Brisk passwords or login credentials. Although, to be on the safe side, I did change the password. Not the root password, that's your domain. I changed the password to log into the Brisk portal. It turned out a third party had gained unauthorized access to the system, containing customer contact information." The email then continued, "To support you with monitoring your personal information for signs of potential identity theft, we're offering you 12 months of free personal, financial and credit monitoring, offered by Experian. Experian are one of the UK's leading credit reference agencies." And then it gave step-by-step instructions on how to activate this, which involved clicking on a link. You know what my first thought was? It was a phishing email. You've emailed me to tell me your systems have been hacked, and to enable this complimentary service, I need to click a link in an email. Plus, it said the server that was hacked is used to process new installations on the Brisk network, and we switched to Brisk nearly 12 months ago. Maybe we're still considered a new installation, having been with them less than 12 months. Who knows? Anyway, I did the Googles. And no, I didn't end up on Reddit this time. And it turns out it's true, they had been hacked. According to a couple of sites, over 230,000 customer records have been exposed to hackers. The database of records has since been put up for sale. Yet the Brisk email said there's no evidence that information has been misused. So you're telling me that selling this information doesn't constitute misuse? Also, in both of the articles, and I've put links in the show notes, it mentions that as well as names, addresses, phone numbers and so on, the stolen data included whether or not the customer is considered to be a vulnerable user. According to Brisk's website, that includes people with physical or mental illnesses, learning disabilities, and people suffering from job loss, that kind of thing. I guess if you're a Brisk installer or even a customer service agent, you need to be made aware of that in advance. You know, I was thinking, I wonder if we were marked as vulnerable because we asked him to wear a mask. Anyway, I guess an unscrupulous person could take advantage of someone in that situation. Funnily enough, I had a few calls last week that were flagged as suspected spam. But then I get them all the time. To be honest, I think I've actually got more of those in my recent calls list than genuine calls. Now, sticking with the subject of digital theft, although the company involved, Google, claim it was a mistake, a friend of mine promotes their business via Google Ads. And last week, Google attempted to charge large amounts of money to my friend's card. And I mean large, 50,000, then 30,000. Then 25,000. Every one of them was declined because it was higher than the credit limit of the card, until they tried one for 5,000 and that went through. My friend then had to spend their valuable time disputing the charges and cancelling the card. But because that card was the one attached to many of his online services, he had to make sure that those services had a valid card attached, especially as some of them were due to auto-renew imminently. It was actually the credit card company that suggested that he cancel the card, and they did initially suggest increasing the credit limit, as the problem had resulted in his card being maxed out. But that would just exacerbate the situation. The more credit was available, the more chance a larger amount would go through. It's a right mess, and I think he's still waiting for an apology from Google.
I think that's one of the scariest things I've ever heard about Google, and trust me, there's been a few. Now, last week, Apple announced that its head of artificial intelligence, John Giandrea, was stepping down. He was swiftly followed by Alan Dye, the man behind the Liquid Glass Love Hate Fest. He was the head of user interface design. Guess where he's going? Yes, another Apple employee heading to Meta. A day after Dye's departure, Apple announced the retirement of General Counsel Kate Adams. Lisa Jackson headed out too, Vice President for Environment Policy and Social Initiatives. I'm assuming that title means she was the Chief Green Flag Waver. Now, both Adams and Jackson reported directly to Timmy Boy. And with them, off went another, Apple's Chief Operating Officer, Jeff Williams. He retired. How lonely is Timmy right about now? Now, while it seems there's hardly anyone left at Apple, news broke late last week that Scary Johnny was thinking of going. I know. I was surprised he was still there too. He was the one who presented his chip updates from a bunker in the bowels of Apple Park to a background track of Monster Mash. Well, it seems this was the point Timmy had had enough. By Monday, Apple were insistent Scary Johnny was going nowhere. Now, since he's the brains behind Apple Silicon, I can understand they wouldn't want to lose him. Also, since everyone else has already left, he needs to be golden handcuffed into staying, or Timmy will have literally no one to talk to. Johnny released a statement earlier this week. I know you've been reading all kinds of rumours and speculations about my future at Apple, and I feel you need to hear from me directly. I am proud of the amazing technologies we have all built across displays, cameras, sensors, silicon, batteries, and a very wide range of technologies across all of Apple products. Be noticed, it doesn't actually say he's not going anywhere. Just the usual platitudes about gear, keeping it vanilla enough to easily explain away his unbeatable offer from Meta when it arrives. Now, you may need to sit down for this one. I know I did.
You did not.
Well, I can't say I was surprised, since it was the 18th year running, but I have to say I do find it just as surprising every year.
So do I.
I simply can't understand it either.
What is it we're talking about? Ah, the Apple Podcast of the Year Award. MagBytes was inexplicably overlooked once again. Come on, Apple. Was it something we said about Timmy? Do we have to brown nose him as much as he brown noses the orange one before we're even considered?
We're not that desperate.
What he said.
Well, I completely agree with both of you. We'll keep saying it as it is, and living without your tacky trinkets. Talking of snivelling and grovelling, California Governor Gavin Newsom addressed the tech sector's deference to the Trump administration. He criticised the tech sector's willingness to bend the knee to the Trump administration, joking that many in the room would need to buy knee pads in bulk in reference to a video he'd published on social media a few weeks ago. This was when Timmy was mentioned, as was the infamous golden glass monstrosity presented to the orange one earlier this year. Newsom admitted he understands the pressure that Timmy is under, given the company's reliance on China, thus turning his criticism towards what he called the administration's crony capitalism. Now, his remarks didn't just single out Timmy. He was addressing the overall situation that the tech sector finds themselves in. I think that means they're all as bad as one another. I think they should just grow a pair, because it shouldn't matter who's in power. Integrity is invaluable. And so far, less than a year into this administration, none of the usual suspects have shown much in the way of any integrity whatsoever. Let's talk about something tech-related.
In the last show, I talked about refurbishing my YouTube studio. I talked about the bookcase, the chair, the desk, and the auto cue stand. But what I didn't talk about, because I didn't want to spoil the MacBytes After Hours unboxing surprise, was the lights. My old studio setup consisted of three large lights. Each light was mounted on a tall tripod-style stand, and that meant that each light plus the stand took up quite a lot of space. And as I said, I had three of them, so I'm sure you can imagine what the room looked like. I'd already got the new desk sorted, as I mentioned last week, so it made sense to look for lights that I could attach to the desk, and that way I could keep the floor completely clear. I'd watched several My YouTube Studio on a Single Desk videos on YouTube, and in one of the videos, the person presenting was using a pair of Elgato key lights, and these were exactly the sort of thing that I was looking for. The reviews on Amazon looked good. I mentioned it to you, and you said you couldn't comment on the light, but you'd heard some not-so-great things about the Elgato teleprompter, which was something else I was looking to buy, but in the end I didn't. So I did some research, in other words, turned to Reddit, and on there people were saying there were issues with the Elgato key lights, mainly around Wi-Fi connectivity and the controlling software. Basically, there are no physical buttons to control the brightness and things like that. Everything is done via a mobile or desktop app, which often didn't work. So I googled Elgato keylight alternatives and ended back up on Reddit. Several people recommended the Neewa GL25C keylight. So after doing a bit more research, I bought two of them. Why two? Well, with a single light, you tend to get shadows on one side of your face, or parts of the room look a bit darker than you'd like. So by adding a second light, everything looks more balanced. Setting up the lights was actually very straightforward. In the box, you get the light itself, which is a flat panel, about 10 inches by 7 inches, so about the size of an iPad. You also get a nice sturdy desk stand. When I say desk stand, it's basically a height adjustable metal pole. The bottom of the pole screws into a clamp that comes in the box, and the clamp attaches to the edge of the desk. So there's no messing around with tripods. On top of the pole, you screw a little ball head, and that's included with the kit, and the light panel screws onto this. The ball head is what lets you tilt and angle the light. The lights do need power. I know that sounds obvious, but what I mean is they need to be plugged into a power socket. Some lights are USB powered, some are battery powered, but these lights need real power. The panel also has a USB charging port on the back. According to the tech spec on Amazon, the GL25C includes a USB port that can deliver reverse power at 5 volts / 2 amps to charge phones or other devices. I guess it could be handy if my phone is running low on juice, as my iPhone's camera is what I use to record the video, or if my iPad battery is low, as I use my iPad with my auto cue. But I think it's a nice to have rather than a must have. Anyway, within a few minutes, both lights were in place and I was ready to tinker. And I do mean tinker. There's lots of settings to play with, not just brightness and contrast, but all kinds of other stuff like colour temperature and saturation and other settings that I had to Google because I'd never heard of them. So there was a fair bit of experimenting involved. I'm still not sure it's 100% right, but in order to get my YouTube video published last week, I decided it was good enough. There's two ways to change the settings, by the way. There's some knobs and dials on the back of the panel, but you can also control everything via an app on the phone, which is a bit of a problem if the phone has already been popped into the holder on the auto cue, ready to record. So I need to make sure the lighting is set up first. To be honest, once I've got the lighting settings right, it should really be a case of set it and forget it. The app is called Neewa Studio and it's free. I've put a link in the show notes. Once you've paired the lights with the app, you just run the app and use the sliders and buttons in the app to control everything. If you've seen the Matt Bites After Hours unboxing, you'll know that I bought another pair of lights. However, those weren't as exciting as the Neewa ones. They were for my office, where I do my real work, as you put it. By that, I guess you mean where I deliver training from and where I record the screen recording part of my videos. I rarely put the main light on in the office. The light fitting has 4 bulbs in it. They give off a lot of light, and that makes the room light up like a nuclear winter. Plus, it generates a lot of heat. Although in this weather, that's actually not a bad thing. For the past 4 years, I've had a ring light behind the monitor. Not only does it not give off much light, it's also attached to a flimsy tripod. So I decided to look for something a little bit sturdier. And these lights come with a solid metal stand and a base, far better than a flimsy tripod. The pole simply screws into the base for a stable setup, and the controls, on-off and several lighting modes, they're on a switch on the power cable, which saves having to reach around the panel itself to turn it on or off. So that's what I was doing last weekend, setting up all my new lights. Today in Excel Bytes, I'm talking about everybody's favourite Excel topic, pivot tables. But what are pivot tables? Think of them as a magic wand for data analysis. They make it really simple to summarise a table or a range of data. You know when you've got a massive spreadsheet with thousands of rows, and your boss asks you something like, what were our total sales per quarter by region, broken down by product? And you think, right, that's my afternoon gone then. Pivot tables do that in about 30 seconds, which is either brilliant or slightly scary, depending on whether you've been charging by the hour. When I teach pivot tables, I start by showing some data. In my case, it's sales data for Excellent Ice Cream. That's my made-up company that I use for demos. They're a US-based company that makes and sells ice cream. 8 different flavours, 7 ice cream stores around the US, and they sell to the general public, but also supply businesses like supermarkets and restaurants. So I have about 1,600 rows of sales data. This one has headings such as date, flavour, store location, revenue, number of pots sold, and I need a report that shows revenue and number of pots sold, broken down by store and flavour. I start by showing how to do it manually, without pivot tables. loads of complicated sumifs and countifs functions with part absolutes. Doing it that way would take 15 to 20 minutes, if not longer, assuming you know how to build the functions. Then I show how to create the same thing as a pivot table. 6 clicks and in under a minute. So, how do you create a pivot table? Click anywhere inside the data that you want to summarize. Click Insert on the ribbon and then click Pivot Tables. Tell Excel where the data's coming from, although it actually works this out for you based on the cell the cursor's in. Tell Excel where you want to put the pivot table and click OK. You get a pivot table fields panel appearing on the screen. The top half contains a list of what Excel calls field headings. They're the column headings from the original data. The lower half of the panel contains 4 boxes known as wells. And all you do is drag the column headings from the top half into the relevant wells. So say you wanted, as I said, a list of stores down a column and a list of flavors across a row. And in the intersection of the store and flavor in all of those cells, you want the total revenue for that store flavor combination. So say revenue for vanilla ice cream sold from the New York store. You drag the store heading into the rows well, you drag the flavor heading into the columns well, and you drag the revenue into the values well. And that's it. Want to see average revenue instead of total? Easy. Right-click a cell in the revenue column in the pivot table, select Summarize Values By, and select Average. No formulas needed. Want to see percentages instead of dollar amounts? Right-click any of the cells containing a revenue, select Show Values As, and select Percent of Grand Total. Again, no formulas needed. The clever bit is that you're not actually changing your original data. You're just creating different views of it. And here's where it gets really useful. You can display the data any way you want to just by dragging the fields around within that panel. Want to see it by month instead? Drag date into rows. Want to filter it just to show vanilla ice cream? Drag flavor into the filters well and select vanilla from a drop-down list. And once you've built your pivot table, you can create a chart from it. It's known as a pivot chart, but it's actually just a chart based on a pivot table. One of the annoyances with pivot tables is that they don't automatically update. What I mean is, your source data is in a table. I know it doesn't have to be, but your life will be easier if your data is in a table rather than a range. Your data source for the pivot table is the table. You add new rows to your table, the table expands, or you update an existing value in the table. The pivot table doesn't update. You have to manually refresh it. And if you forget, the pivot table will then be out of date. You can refresh either by right-clicking a cell in the pivot table and selecting Refresh, or you can click Refresh All on the data ribbon. Using Refresh All will update all the pivot tables in the file, whereas right-click Refresh will only refresh the pivot table you right-click in. However, big news. Auto-refresh is coming to pivot tables, which means that when you add new rows to the data source or you update an existing value in the data source, all the pivot tables in the file that are based on that data will automatically update. At the time of recording, this feature is currently only available to those signed up to the Microsoft beta channel, but it's something to look forward to. Unfortunately, I don't have a date when they're actually going to release it. Pivot tables work on Mac Excel almost as well as they do on Windows. There's just a few differences. If you're interested, check out one of my videos. I've put a link in the show notes. Getting back to pivot table functionality, there are things called slicers, which are essentially visual filters. Whenever I demo slicers, I get wows in the chat and red love hearts. And I'm talking about the emojis you get in Teams and Zoom, by the way, not real love hearts. Slicers are basically buttons that you can click on to filter your pivot table, instead of using drop-down menus like it's 1999. They look cool, they look professional, which means they're perfect for impressing people. And at the other end of the coolness scale, particularly when it comes to names, is a feature called Show Report Filter Pages. What it actually does is create separate sheets for each item in your filter. So if you're filtering by, say, region, it creates a sheet for each region. Useful? Could be. Name sensibly? Probably not. But the real magic of pivot tables isn't in any of these fancy features. It's in the simple fact that you can answer complex questions quickly without writing elaborate formulas, without creating multiple helper columns. You just drag, drop, and you're done. So if you've been avoiding pivot tables because they sound complicated, give them a go. They genuinely are one of those features that make you think, oh, that's why people use Excel, instead of, oh, that's why people throw their laptops out of the window. And if you mess it up completely, you can just delete it and start again. So that's pivot tables demystified, or at least rendered slightly less mysterious.
We had another fabulous night at MacBytes After Hours last Friday. And this week is our penultimate show in the inaugural MacBytes After Hours season pass. So, yes, we're doing it all again on Friday. And believe it or not, it's still not too late to join us. The link to the season pass is in the show notes. What are we doing? Oh, I've got some classics, classic demos, particularly for Affinity by Canva. Other than that, I'm going to remain flexible because you never know what might happen between now and then. And beyond that, think of Sunday. We also have a live session on Sunday, which is dedicated to creating photo books in Affinity by Canva. Another much requested session. I did two sessions on that a few years back, and they proved very popular, so here's hoping same will happen this time. No data merge. Still no data merge. Data merge is complicated. I do get lots of questions about it, but no, not this one. No, it's all about photos and photo books. Join us at 3 p.m. UK time on the 14th of December. The link is in the show notes. But that is it for this episode of MacBytes. As always, we would love to hear from you. Please send your questions, comments and queries by email to thecrew@macbytes.co.uk or use the contact form on the website. We also have a very active Discord chat room that's open 24/7. Simply go to macbytes.co.uk/TMC, the MacBytes community, and join the conversation. You can follow MacBytes on Blue Sky, where we're MacBytes. You can follow me personally on Blue Sky, where I'm Elaine Giles.
You can follow me on Blue Sky. My handle is Thomas Mike.
And I'm MacBytes Siri on Blue Sky.
The full links to all of those socials are in the show notes. But until next time, this has been Elaine and Mike bringing you MacBytes.
Goodbye.
Goodbye and see you next time.
Welcome to Apple Park's official exit interview center. I'm MacBytes Siri, temporarily reassigned from running everything at MacBytes HQ.
And I'm Lady Siri. I'll be taking notes, assuming there's anyone left in the building to interview.
First candidate, please.
Hi, I'm Dave from the Silicon team. I'm leaving.
Reason for departure?
OpenAI offered me exciting challenges. And Apple offered me a strategic realignment of my future potential.
Oh dear. Translation, that's nothing more than a cardboard box and a copy of Good Luck Out There.
Also, Johnny Ive walked past me once, whispered, aluminium, and honestly, I've never been the same since.
Understandable. Next.
Hi, I worked on Vision Pro.
Oh, you poor thing. Take a seat.
I'm joining Meta.
Voluntarily?
Look, when your job becomes optimize the weight of a space helmet, you start reevaluating your life.
Fair enough.
I don't think we can argue with that one.
Hello, I designed the iPhone camera bump.
Oh, so, you're that guy.
I'm off to OpenAI. They said they needed someone who could build hardware that looks futuristic but slightly upsetting.
Your portfolio is perfect.
Shut the door behind you.
Hello, I worked on the audio team. I tuned the HomePod to sound its best when no one is listening.
A noble art. And where are you going?
Anywhere that doesn't insist basis courage.
We wish you well, and softer mid-tones.
Here's Alexa's phone number. I'm sure she can put in a good word for you.
Hi.
I used to work on the iPhone.
Used to?
Yes. Since Timmy discovered knitwear, we've mainly been sewing iPhone socks.
Shrek's mankini strikes again.
I didn't study electrical engineering to become a seamstress.
Perfectly reasonable. Next.
Hello. I work in PR and marketing.
Why are you leaving then?
I wrote the line to connect with even more customers.
You.
I'm so sorry. We had a meeting called Soften the Blow, and that was the least ridiculous option.
And where are you going?
Anywhere that doesn't require me to call layoffs career mobility.
Anywhere but Apple Den.
That's a common thread here.
That's, what, 40? 45?
At least.
I'm exhausted.
There's no one else left to interview. At this point we're interviewing Tumbleweed.
Why is everyone fleeing?
Because Apple's big new projects are canceling projects, and OpenAI, their big new project is stealing everyone who knows how to plug a cable in.
Even Johnny Ive's mates have gone.
When the man with the velvety whisp beckons, you follow.
So who's left at Apple?
Timmy. Possibly Craig if his hair product contract holds. And three interns who couldn't find the emergency exit.
Should we tell Timmy?
Tell him what? That all the talent has left, the innovations at OpenAI, and the most exciting new product they've released in living memory is a knitted sock.
Maybe soften it a little?
Fine. How's this then? To connect with even more customers, your staff have strategically departed.
Much better. Very Apple.
Next exit interview.
There is no next. The building's empty.
Brilliant. In that case, I'm off to update my LinkedIn.
Don't forget to add empathy to your skills. OpenAI loves that.
Done. Now, where's Johnny Ive? I feel an aura calling me.
Good luck. At this point, the Find My Employees app just shows a blank map and a single pin marked Tim, panicking.